All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet, I mean clap your heads. Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Racing Through History.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to another edition of the Goat Rodeo. My name is Jeff Gilder, and I will be the host tonight. Hope you all doing fine, fine, fine. Hope you're getting ready for a great Christmas holiday. We're just tickled to death to be here. Let's get right into it and tell you who's here. Starting all the way out on the end, the mayor of Hand, South Carolina, Coastal Jack Walker, is in the house with yet another Carolina Race Place historic race finish right out of the archives of the CarolinaRaceplace.zoomshare.com, brought to you in part by Bobby's Auto Parts from Shallot, North Carolina, home of the Endless Warranty. Hello, Jack. How are you?
I'm just doing great.
Man, that's a mouthful to get all your sponsors in there.
It is. Well, you know, it's pretty tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are we going tonight, man?
Man, we are going up North Carolina way, where it's probably pretty damn cold right now. Asheville.
Pretty damn cold here, if you ask me.
You got that right.
You're never supposed to say that about Myrtle Beach, are you?
No, but, you know, it's when it's below 50, it's cold here.
Amen. Yep.
So, that's cool. All right, and to his right, the one, the only, the bopper, the man. How you doing tonight, sir?
Doing good, Jeff.
Good to see you, too.
The big Christmas show.
The big Christmas show is here, man. All right. What are you going to do tonight, Bobby? You got any idea yet?
I'm still working on it.
All right, cool. We'll leave it to that. And to his right, the man on the street, Mr. Splitter, Hewlin Overcast View, is here with a big, I'm telling you what, big breaking news tonight. How you doing, you?
It's about as old as 1997. I'm doing just fine.
Hughes Views on the news, folks. We're going all the way back to 1997 for a prediction of the future. We'll see how true it holds out.
Hey, y'all are already seeing it.
Yeah. All right, you. All right, out west in Columbia, near Columbia, in the lair. The legend is there. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing great. Thank you, Jeff. And it sounds like you all are doing great popcorn-wise and everything.
We would like to thank Miss Devin Alexander for a nice bucket of Cromer's popcorn and peanuts tonight. We are absolutely enjoying that stuff right now.
Yes, we are.
Yep, along with an adult beverage.
The message board cut off.
Except for Bobby. He doesn't have adult beverages. But anyway. So, Tim, have you got a legendorial tonight?
Yes, sir, I do. It's a two-page one, so I don't think it'll take too long.
What's it about?
It is about the Dickens, you say.
The Dickens, you say. Cody Dinsmore is not with us at the moment, but he called in before the show. He'll be here momentarily, and we'll see what he's got to say. All right, let's get right into some racing talk right here, because this is a racing talk radio. Who wants to talk first?
Well, it looks like the new title name has been announced by NASCAR this week.
Yeah, I saw that. And there was some discussion in recent days about whether NASCAR was going to have Cup in the title and whether it, in fact, needed to have Cup. And so it looks like all those questions have been answered, as it is the Monster
Energy
NASCAR Cup Series.
Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series.
Monster Energy?
Yeah.
NASCAR Cup, okay. So?
Which I'm glad they got the cup in there, but you know what's going to happen. After we get past Daytona and the newness wears off, everybody in the media is just going to call it the NASCAR Cup.
Or the Monster Cup.
Or the Monster Cup. No, the good thing about NASCAR it is, it's got NASCAR in it.
It does.
Because if the sponsor leaves, you don't have to change the name again.
Yep.
I think that's a good thing.
Yep.
You know, I don't know.
But I think the media is going to be calling it the NASCAR Cup rather than the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup. It's too damn long.
Well, what about just the Monster Energy Cup?
I don't believe it will.
Monster Cup.
I don't believe it will. We'll see. It remains to be seen. That's my prediction.
Somebody's going to have to suck up to the sponsor at some point.
Yeah, well, they're going to suck up big time for Daytona. You can count on that.
I'll go with Monster Cup.
We'll see. By the time we get to Richmond or...
I'd like to get off right off the bat into Hugh's segment tonight, because I think that's a good thing for us to start talking about right here. And Hugh, if you want to give us a little preamble there about what that thing's about, and then you can pull it out and read us what you want to read.
Okay. I am in the process, very, very slowly, of reading Smokey Unick's autobiography. And in the first book of the three, about halfway through it, and the title is Walking Under a Snake's Belly. But anyway, I read two or three paragraphs of his visit to the Daytona track during a race in 1997. And his experience, he had been banned from that by Big Bill France. So he just drove his old Pinto and parked up close to the tunnel and tried to buy a ticket, and somebody recognized him and wouldn't let him buy a ticket, and so he walked in.
What year was that?
1997. Yeah. And it's of his experience. Somebody on the infield recognized him and dispatched a state trooper to arrest him and throw him out. And the really ironic part about that was the arresting officer, or the officer they sent to pick him up, was his own son, a state trooper. But then I think somebody in the tower thought better of it and said, oh, no, just let him go anywhere he wants as long as he doesn't walk out on the track. But I'm going to do my best just to paraphrase this because it's too long and too involved. But basically, he had seen what he wanted to see and was ready to leave and was walking. Knowing what I know about the layout of the track, he was walking in the photographer's area on the infield, which is between the inside fence of the track and the fence that separates the fans. There's two fences, and he was in that area. They let the press in there, but they don't let the fans in there. And he realized that there were fans that wanted his autograph. And so he walked over and walked along the fence, he said, about three quarters of a mile, best I remember, and spoke to people, signed autographs. And the thing that struck me so much about it was that he was describing the fans, said, these are not high dollar people, these are poor people. And then he said, in money only. But he was talking about they didn't have brand new t-shirts that they had bought at the thing. I was signing the t-shirts they had on their backs with holes in them. And the fact that NASCAR was charging them a big amount of money and just simply forgetting about them. And he predicted right then, that was in 1997, that would prove to be the downfall of NASCAR, because they were already beginning to forget about the little guy, their fans, the people that put them on the map. And he talked about the coming of the souvenir trailers, and the big dollar sponsors, and all of the big high dollar press people, and all the hangers-on, as he called them, that were going to eventually bring the sport down, that they had forgotten the fans, and they were beginning to cater to their fancy drivers who didn't have time to sign autographs for the fans, took it as an offense to have to mix with the ordinary people. And by damn, it has come true, every bit of it. And this was just the observations of Smokey Unick back in 1997.
That's basically 20 years ago, 19
yeah.
years ago.
I stopped after I had read it and read it again, and I thought, dang, I can't believe this. He's just laid it out, exactly what is killing NASCAR. And that, like you say, 19 years ago. And it was strictly from the standpoint of a racer and a car builder. It wasn't from the little guy fan. I guess the little fan 20 years ago couldn't see that. Couldn't see that they were being manipulated right off the infield and right out of priced right out of being able to see races.
I didn't see it, and I was there, and I didn't see it.
Yeah, I was too, and I didn't see it. Later on, it began to. I guess the first thing that I noticed was the fact that they more or less legislated the redneck off the infield at Darlington. They went around, took their Confederate flags away, and they banned the race trucks.
That's real racing.
No, even 20 years ago, they were already rumblings of wanting to get rid of the flag. They didn't. People reminded them very pointedly of their First Amendment rights. But they literally priced the redneck off the infield of all the tracks. It started at Darlington, but it spread immediately to all the tracks. There were those that really, really did not like the redneck image that NASCAR had. Hey, guess what, NASCAR? That's what built you. That's what made you great. And if you get rid of that, guess what? You got what you got today. Nothing.
They could have redneck-only seating.
Yep. Hey, I thought the infield was a pretty good place for them.
Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah, excuse me, Hugh, I've got to ask, but if you're reading chat and all that, all these people are asking about how to get the video up, you know, and I actually clicked on it, and I can't believe I got it, but it came up for me, so you might want to tell.
Devin's there, she can tell him, can't she?
All right, whatever, I just thought.
Refresh your page, is what she said.
Refresh the page.
It's there. Yeah, get you an aerosol.
Yeah, I know. I'm sitting here watching. I couldn't believe when I clicked on it; it just came up. I said, "Wow, yay me!"
All right, that it, Hugh.
I'm done.
That was good.
I've said my little piece.
I thought that was great. Very timely.
Smokey was pretty far ahead of his time in a lot of areas.
Smokey, he absolutely was. The more I read his book, the more enthused I am. I've been since high school. I've been a fan of Smokey Unix. But I learn about him, the more in awe of him than I am.
Yeah, you know, I was impressed with the safer barrier, or whatever you want to call it, that he invented years and years and years ago, which was basically with tires and chaining them together, or however he had them together. And that was pretty cool.
He was a very, very, very smart man.
Yep.
Hey, to have survived combat missions in World War II, I discovered he had his own two airplanes that he just took from theater to theater. One of them he got out of an aircraft junkyard, put it together, and it was his. Nobody else flew it. It was his airplane because he built it out of spare parts.
That's probably a good thing.
Yep.
All right.
Everyone is... And rightfully so, everyone is anticipating what Monster will do, or hopefully won't do. And there's a lot of just general sense of optimism, which is good, and that's kind of a breath of fresh air. But to put some nuts and bolts down, what exactly? And everybody says, well, Monster's an edgy entity. They advertised, you know, on the air, whatever that might mean. But in nuts and bolts and bricks and mortar, what exactly can Monster do to generate interest? At this point in time, the schedule is pretty much set in stone. It's got to be.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they can't be changing the length of races and this, that, and the other. There ain't really nothing they can. The chase is going to be and all of that.
Well, they can do things through promotional areas, like putting NASCAR Cup Series, Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series on their cans and a little picture and that kind of thing.
Yep.
TV advertisements and stuff. But, you know, I keep coming back to, if it's true, if it's only a two-year contract, are they really going to do it?
Well, I had this conversation with Bobby on the way down here this evening. One of the things that I could see them doing, which would be relatively easy to do, would be some sort of a new approach to things like qualifying. You remember back when Charlotte, 15, 20 years ago, One of the things they did for qualifying was you had to make a pit stop,
right.
Two-tire pit stop,
right.
During in a three-lap qualifying run, things like that.
But did that help anything? I mean,
well, one thing about it, during the time that they were doing stuff like that,
last all night long.
Yeah.
Well, it kept the fans in the seats, and
if you got them there to start with,
they were filling 197,000 seat venue. Not necessarily for qualifying.
Well, they ain't now.
Nope. They're not even doing 97,000 now.
Well, let's try to think positive. But you know, I hope they're successful. Whatever they come up with.
What does edginess mean? How do you? I mean, what's that going to do? We're edgy.
Well, one of the things is that their Monster Energy Victory Circle girls are going to be scantily clad.
Well, how in the world would that be any different than anything we've ever seen? It needs is scantily clad girls.
Yeah.
Well,
at the Streamline.
They sure got away from that after the Union 76 got out of it. They began to wear coveralls.
That ain't going to do it.
No, that's not going to do it.
No.
Scantily clad girls, if they was out there with the... That ain't going
to
do it.
I mean, you know, their emphasis has to be to try to reach a younger crowd, but at the same time, they don't want to alienate the older fans that have stuck around. So that's going to be tough.
They don't care about that.
What? I think they do.
The head guy said, young people set trends. It's up to old people to catch on.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Well, the trend they've set now is young people don't even get driver's license.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Young people are fundamentally... nowhere near as interested in automobiles as we was.
Exactly.
They're Uber riders.
Yeah. this is a real story. I have a customer who asked his son and his friends, because he was concerned. He said, what are y'all guys going to do if you have a flat tire and you're driving down the road? And you will never guess the answer.
Call somebody.
They said, you call AAA.
Yep.
I mean, it makes sense, but we, our generation, would have never, we wouldn't even thought like that.
No, we would have got out and changed it. Of course, a lot of the new cars, including mine sitting right out there, doesn't have a spare tire. They don't even come with spare tires.
That's
anymore.
A scary thought.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
No spare tire. They basically have a little bottle of... something that's kind of like, I assume it's like fix-a-flat.
Fix-a-flat to just squirt in there if it doesn't have a big hole in it. You can pump it up and go on.
See, we thought that the car was the end of the rainbow.
Exactly.
And everything about cars was just that much, that was icing on the cake. We didn't care what it was. If it involved the car, we thought it was just the greatest thing in the world. This generation does not think like we do.
No, not at all.
That is my point. They don't, it's going to take a much... They got to somehow convince them that a car is something to be interested in.
Well, I can see maybe them pairing up some of their spokespersons, and I don't necessarily mean scantily clad women, but some of their other sports people.
Promotional people. People that are backing.
People that are skateboarders. Basketball. Any of the motorcycle riders. And pair them with cup drivers, you know, and just have them hang out with them. Be in the pits. Be their shadow, so to speak.
Right.
If they're already popular among the crowd that supports Monster Energy, that will be their end. I have no idea that they'll do that, but I mean, that's a thought that they might put some of their current celebrities with the NASCAR people to generate interest. I would think that there's lots of things that they can try. How many of them actually work and how many of them are successful remains to be seen, but I guess that goes along with any sponsorship change. Your marketing people need to be smart enough to read the tea leaves and see what they think the public wants or the race fans want or generate their own new race fans. That's what they're going to have to do. New fans.
When RJR came along in 1971, the whole TV era was yet to come. They did, for all of RJR's brilliance and horsepower and financial wherewithal, They didn't have anything, a whole lot to do with that. That was already in the pipeline. That was technology emerging. And they rode the wave to an extent also. TV coming and NASCAR just skyrocketed. It was a perfect storm kind of thing.
Well, exactly. It was new to a lot of people.
It was new, exactly. That's my point.
Now you got 15 auto show, race shows on every week.
That is exactly my point.
Well, what was it? 69 was the first flag-to-flag race that had ever been broadcast?
79.
Was 79.
But see, this was a rising wave that everybody was riding, everybody. And there was no way to go for a while but up, no matter what. You couldn't screw it up. There was a groundswell. It wasn't so much genius as it was just timing.
Right place at the right time.
So that time has passed.
Yep.
That's the fundamental thing, as I see it, is the it's like a bell curve. Everything's a bell curve, and you're on that growth cycle. And for a long time, NASCAR was on the right. And then you get to the top of it, and then it starts going down. I mean, that's just a natural phenomenon.
The console TV in your grandmother's living room is a thing of the past. This cell phone I hold in my hand with a screen on it is today's coming thing, and that's going to shrink up, and that's going to change as technology advances. But they're going to have to figure a way to put everything that they're doing on this little cell phone. Otherwise, I don't think they're going to be successful.
You know, one of NASCAR's arguments, and this is true, that, people don't watch TV, and so our numbers ain't very big because they have other ways of interacting with the product. And that is exactly true, but the problem with that, how does anybody cash in on that? Yep. Nobody is taken to the bank when you flip the Twitter and get a race update. You can't deposit that in the NASCAR. I mean, that's just free. But that is true. But it just states another complexity of the problem. You know, TV numbers don't really mean anything anymore, yet they're, to a large extent,
unless they're big,
paying the bills right now. You know, this humongous TV contract is, you know, that's the gold, the silver bullet at the moment. But as the information and time continues to progress, they're going to be less inclined to re-up because of just phenomena. But they say everybody's watching it on their cell phone. Why are we going to pay $100 billion, you know, when nobody's watching? Although people are still following it, it's hard to cash in on it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a challenging phenomenon. And just having an edgy sponsor, they've got their work cut out for them to somehow reverse all these trends.
Well, they've been pretty successful in their other sponsorship endeavors, it seems.
Well, so, I'm sure they've got people working on
24/7
ways to do that,
and it's going to be good, bad, or indifferent. It's going to be really interesting for us older folks that have seen a lot of the changes and been around for a lot of the changes, what they do and how they do it, and if they're successful or not.
Don't you think a good indication of that is going to be Speed Weeks this year?
Well, what can they do then?
I don't know.
Oh, well,
if I knew, I'd be working for them.
Yeah, you'd be working for them, making big dollars. Yeah. Possibly. The other side of that coin is that too quick to be able to get up anything off the ground? And I don't know the answer to that either. I'm just saying that that yes, if there's a large amount of interest in Speed Weeks and if there's a big turnout.
Well, there will always be a big turnout.
Well, there is for Speed Weeks.
For Speed Weeks, and Daytona is not a bellwether.
Right.
That will always have high numbers because it's Daytona.
It will be a sellout.
You've got to get down to like California and Atlanta and Dover and mess like that,
Richmond,
before you see what the deal is.
Yep.
I'd say that the next big one will be the next Darlington race.
Yeah, but
the new one have worn off.
You may see some integration of things at Daytona. I don't know, some kind of skateboard championship or a world something other.
Been done before.
To add into it, you know, I don't know.
What did Wentz, let's go back in history a little bit. What did Winston do?
They gave out free cigarettes.
Well, and they bought, I remember thousands of gallons of paint. Everything was red and white. The, even the uniforms. You remember here not long ago the
we get Daytona. The tracks ought to be black with green letters saying "Monster" all around.
It may be, and I would suggest.
Damn, what is that?
I would suggest that it is.
What?
What do you?
I think the surf's coming in.
I think it's the monster people.
What? I didn't hear it.
Must be the Monster Energy people washing us away.
What, are you hearing something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big static.
It's gone.
Big
now.
Time static.
It's in that thing there, then, because I'm not hearing it.
It's gone.
It's out there.
It's gone.
Oh. Sounded like a wave coming.
It sounded like a wave. Sounded like a wave.
I hear Tim breathing heavy, but that's about it. Hey, Cody, how you doing, buddy?
We can hear you, Tim.
Cody.
We need to get Cody's take on all this.
Cody. There he is. Hey. What's up, buddy?
Oh, not too much. Sorry about my delay here.
It's all right, man.
Well, Cody had an interesting comment last week.
Yeah, we had a bunch of people drop off chat all of a sudden, so whatever it was affected a bunch of people. Whatever that strange thing was.
And I didn't even hear it.
We could hear it. It sounded like a big wave coming in, like you're on the beach.
Huh.
Washed them right off the chat line.
Yeah, it washed them right away.
Huh. It didn't stop the radio stream. It's still going. So what was you going to say about Cody?
I was going to say last week, Cody, we was talking about Cody and Dawsonville and Chase Elliott. And he said that most people his age, they knew who Chase Elliott was. You know, they knew him and all that, but that was about the extent of it.
Mm-hmm.
This is, Cody's age, because Cody and Chase, y'all roughly the same age, right?
Yeah, we're like 6 months apart or something
Your peer group sort of knows him, but that's sort of it sounded like sort of the extent of it.
Yeah, they know who he is, but he, my peer group isn't the ones that follows him regularly and, keeps up with the point standings and the chase and all this format. I would say if you got one out of 12, maybe one out of 15 people that watches more than, let's say, 10 NASCAR races a year, okay? Because you're always going to have somebody the people who watch Daytona, because probably their father watches Daytona, and they probably have a big, like a Super Bowl party kind of deal, So you're going to have some of those, but, as far as I know, there's no hardcore NASCAR fans that follow it every single week.
Yeah, I mean, that is my point.
Right.
That right there.
Cody, if you were in charge of Monster Energy drink, what would you be doing since you're in that age bracket that would follow other things that they would do?
That's a good question. I'd probably have to think about it, but I guess I'd probably start giving away free tickets or having some kind of contest where you could win free tickets and
$5 tickets.
Well, either that or something like turn in so many, kind of like how Winston used to do with their cartons and the pack of cigarettes. You turn in, five cartons, mail them back, and you get tickets to whatever race you want to. So
I show up with 5 or 10 empty cans of Monster Energy drink.
I might take a little bit of issue there, not to be just disagreeing with Cody, but I won't mention any names, but I had a meeting with a golf course who's willing to start spending a lot of money to market their golf course, which I'm really glad they do.
Yay.
But it's not in really good shape. So all that money that you spend to market the golf course, if people come there and have a bad experience, you just wasted it.
Exactly. Oh, they got to have a good experience.
So I don't care how many tickets you give away, if the product is not fixed to where it's going to engage younger people, you just wasted all that effort.
So does that mean the drivers have to be much more reachable?
The drivers have to be more reachable. The product itself has to be more engaging. Yeah. They're going to have to break it up, shorten it, do something. And, I mean, there's something has to be done to make people want to consume the product. I don't know this for a fact, but I was told that there were 60,000 tickets given away at a Charlotte race a few years ago, and almost nobody came with them. Mm-hmm. But so I agree that you got to market and you got to do things marketing wise, but the marketing is not really the problem. NASCAR and TV people have spent a fortune marketing NASCAR. NASCAR is very well branded, it's very well marketed. The problem is with the freaking product.
All right, how do you improve the product? Well, make the cars harder to drive.
You really can't this year.
Get the drivers more accessible one way or the other. Allowing people back in the pits after the race.
I think so. I think you shorten it up. We've talked about heat races and things like that. Everybody's got an excuse not to do it, you know. But you're going to have to do something to make people want to consume the product. And right now they're not.
Yeah. But you know what? Another thing that I'm thinking, I feel like NASCAR has tried to change their image over the last 12 years from your back, not really backwoods, but your rural part of the racing to what it is now. And I say that because when I was in school growing up, you know, everybody would, you know, I would obviously say I'm a NASCAR fan. Everybody's like, you like to watch a bunch of rednecks go around in circles. You know, that's the perception of people my generation see NASCAR as, a bunch of rednecks going in circles. So you could say they need to work on their proving that it's not.
It was that way when I was your age. Same thing. Yep. They said the same thing, except redneck wasn't the term of choice.
Oh, okay.
But the meaning was the same.
The meaning was the same. It was just a different...
back in that day, with fewer things to do, people settled for watching rednecks go in circles.
Yep.
But you know... Nowadays, I think redneck is the farthest thing from NASCAR, but they still got that image behind it from all those years that they were represented.
Yeah, you're right about that. That was always the athletic crowd. They would not be interested in it. You know, in high school, the jock crowd.
Yeah. Now, probably 90% of your pit road is made up of former athletes who played in big time sports.
Yes.
But nobody knows that.
Yep, that's true.
Back in the 80s, that got to be a big thing. That's where they started using athletes as over the wall pit crew.
All right. We're going to have to move on here. We got to get in a Carolina Race Place, a legendorial, and a bopper segment. Bopper, you just hold up your finger when you're ready, and I'll put you in queue, okay?
I've sort of already been in the segment, so y'all go ahead.
All right.
Which I want to see what finger he holds up.
Yeah.
We got to have the legendorial, and Tim's got to tell us about his thing last week, the stocks for
college. Yeah, that's true. All right, Coach.
Oh, Patrick did that last night. He took care of that last night.
All right, Jack, take us to the Carolina Race Place historic race finish.
Cool as a moose.
Cool. All right. Tonight, we're going to Asheville, North Carolina. New Asheville Speedway held a 99-lap NASCAR late model sportsman race on Friday night, May 13th, 1966. Also on the card that night was a 20-lap rookie race, two hobby heat races, and a hobby feature race. The night-ending hobby feature race ended up being rained out after four laps. So much for that.
Well, I heard that story.
Damn. The late models.
Mad because it was rained out.
Yeah,
mad.
Oh yeah, they wanted tickets back. Buddy.
Yeah, wanted money back.
They're probably still calling, trying to get them back.
You look to reschedule that race.
The late model sportsman race at the famous 1/3 mile paved oval was the main event.
Is this the new Asheville Speedway?
This is the new Asheville.
That's now the Velodrome.
Exactly.
Okay.
Jack
Velodrome.
Jack Ingram won the feature races the two previous weeks at the track. In the field that night was the defending New Asheville Speedway champion, Bob Presley. It was brought to the attention of the track management that NASCAR had a rule stating that races 100 laps or more require cars to have a rear window. Points could not...
Hope, state that again. Back up the bus.
The bus said that it was brought to the attention of the track management that NASCAR had a rule stating that races 100 laps or more required cars to have rear windows. Points could not be awarded to cars without rear windows. A review of the late model sportsman cars at the track found that only the 1955 Chevrolet driven by Ned Setzer had a rear window.
Oops.
So one car.
And that was a big win in a 55 Chevrolet.
Yep. The late model sportsman race originally scheduled for 103 laps, but was reduced to 99 laps before the start to comply with the NASCAR rule. So they just reduced the race from 103 to 99. So
that was an easy fix.
The rule. Ned Setzer won the pole position. Jack Ingram started on the outside front row. When the feature race took the green flag, Ned Setzer led the first lap, followed by Bosco Lowe and Jack Ingram. On lap six, Ingram passed Lowe for second place. Jack Ingram was on a charge and passed Setzer for the lead on lap 11. At the halfway point, Bosco Lowe passed Ingram for the lead on lap 51. On lap 89, Jack Ingram passed Dickie Plemons, putting him a lap down. Just after getting by Plemons, Plemons tapped Ingram's rear bumper. Both cars spun out without hitting anything. The caution flag came out as the new leader became Bosco Lowe. The green flag waved again with four laps to go on lap 95. On the final lap, Jack Ingram caught Bosco Lowe in the third turn, gave him a nudge and took the lead, and then on to the checkered flag. So Jack Ingram won
at the Velodrome.
All right, here's the way they finished. The winner, Jack Ingram, the number 11 from Asheville, North Carolina, 55 Chevrolet, followed by his brother, Tom Ingram, from Asheville, North Carolina, and a 56 Ford. Bosco Lowe, West Asheville, North Carolina, 55 Chevrolet. Bob Presley, Asheville, North Carolina, 55 Chevrolet. Ned Setzer came in fifth, Cherryville, North Carolina, 55 Chevrolet. Dickie Plemons, West Asheville, North Carolina, 55 Chevrolet. Jackie Fox, Asheville, North Carolina, 56 Chevrolet. Don Israel, Asheville, North Carolina, a 55 Chevrolet. Cecil Gordon, Horseshoe, North Carolina, a 55 Chevrolet. Clarence Ogle, Swannanoa, North Carolina, a 56 Chevrolet. Roy Trantham, Asheville, North Carolina, a 59 Ford. Carl Dobbins, Asheville, North Carolina, a 56 Ford. Ed McMurray, Hendersonville, North Carolina, a 56 Chevy. Tommy Brown, Black Mountain, North Carolina, 59 Ford. Finishing 15th, Alvin Brown, Asheville, North Carolina, a 59 Ford. George Miller, Arden, North Carolina, a 57 Ford. Max Ledbetter, Franklin, North Carolina, a 56 Chevy. In the final in the car, in the 18th position, Gene Bodford, Burnsville, North Carolina. Bobby, there were three 59 Ford race cars in this
59
race.
59 Fords? 59.
I don't think I've ever seen a 59 Ford late model sportsman. I don't recall ever seeing
59
Ford. 59 Fords.
I can't hardly believe that.
Have you ever seen a 59 Ford late model sportsman back in the days?
The only one I've ever seen in the world was that one that Fred Harb supposedly had. There's always a picture of it at Bowman Gray. It was a Grand National, though.
Yeah, that was Grand National. I saw the Grand National cars, but not a late model sportsman.
Well, they were about square. I can't imagine anybody wanting to run one. Not to mention the fact that the sheet metal was so thin, that, of course, it made it for a lighter body, but they also rusted off the off the street cars. I guess it would have the race cars, too.
But obviously, the car of choice was the 55 Chevrolet in this era at Asheville.
Well, and they had real frames under them, too. How many vintage cars have got 55 Chevrolet frames under them?
Yeah. Well, all of them, a lot of people in that race is from Asheville.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah, Asheville, Hendersonville, Horseshoe.
Hey, but, sad thing is how many racers are from Asheville now?
I don't know many.
Banjo's shop was in that greater area.
Yeah.
They traded the racing garages in for art and croissant places.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah. Pot farms.
The Velodrome.
That's really sad. That's just, for a racer, that's really sad.
You're going to piss off the bicyclist. Yeah.
I don't care. I'm not one, even though I own a bicycle.
But there was a lot of good racers in this.
Oh, there was.
Jack Ingram, Bosco, Bob Presley, Ned Setzer. I mean, those are first-class racers.
Those are first-class. Roy Trantham.
Yep.
That was a name.
A lot of these guys raced in Columbia and other places.
Few of them
got down here.
Cecil Gordon, for gosh sakes, was Winston Cup journeyman forever. I seen Cecil Gordon at one time at Rockingham backing his old, he had a box truck that he pulled with. He was backing her up to get the trailer hooked up to it after the race, after driving in the race.
Doing it himself.
He was driving the tow truck to get his car loaded up.
Yep.
And that was probably in the late 70s, early 80s. That was, we were still at that stage.
I guess out of this list, Bobby, the...
They probably fly in truck drivers now. Have a jet, just this is the guy that drives the truck from the pit area to pick up the car, then he flies back out somewhere else. Have a helicopter to come get him.
They may.
They might.
The truck driver, the hauler driver, is also the chief cook for most of them, and he's also responsible for the content of the hauler. It's his responsibility to make sure that all of the parts and tools and equipment and everything is on that truck when he leaves the shop.
So the resume is you got to have a DHL or whatever driver's license and be able to cook.
CDL. Yes.
Yeah.
CDL. And a CDL and a cook's certificate. And, oh, yeah, you should have an accounting degree in order to be able to keep up with all of the stuff that's on that hauler. There's thousands and thousands of bits and pieces on one of the haulers.
To a large extent, the lid got blew off of Pandora's box on some of this is fluff. I mean, all this stuff. The show is exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's still a 500-mile race. But all of this fluff that goes along with it, that could be... That doesn't contribute to the product. That's part of your argument, Jeff. All the million-dollar motorhomes don't make the race Not one bit better. All the helicopters, all the airplanes.
I think the number one thing they could do
is
make the drivers more reachable.
Yep, I agree with that, Jeff.
I mean, that's the number one thing they could do. Have them go into town a week before and do an interview at local station and those kind of things. Not something that's done from a studio out of Mooresville. But right there in town.
All right,
you know,
Tim.
All that kind of stuff.
I'm ready. Fire it off, buddy. Here we go. December 20th, 2016 Legendorial, which I have entitled The Dickens, You Say. Yes, this is a racing history show. We all know that. But I wanted to pause here this 5 days before Christmas to talk about the spirit of the season, or perhaps more appropriate, the ghost of Christmas is past and to come. Charles Dickens has always been one of my favorite writers, even though I thought I would die when trying to get through Silas Marner back in junior high. In his stories, he created so many characters that live on in the memories of all who ever read his work. David Copperfield and Oliver Twist were as real to me in school as the friends sitting around me in class. This time of year, of course, our minds turn to one of Dickens' most famous works, A Christmas Carol. Actually, the name Dickens gave to the novelette was A Christmas Carol in Prose, being a ghost story of Christmas. The memorable characters of Bob Cratchit, Tiny Tim, and of course Ebenezer Scrooge are forever etched into the minds of those of us who read the book or have watched one or more of the several adaptations presented in movies. Although not an autobiography of Dickens' life, much of what is related in the book actually applies to Dickens. His father was in prison for debt when Charles was 12. Charles was forced to work in a blacking factory with many other kids. It was there he learned of the plight of the poor children, which would impact his life profoundly. From this experience, Charles became an activist for children when he became an adult and was moderately successful in his efforts for childhood labor reform in London. There is no doubt the Scrooge has for a long time applied to mean, stingy, selfish men. To be called Scrooge was, and is to most, an insult demeaning whatever status the person so-called believed he has achieved. I once felt that way, but no more. I would proudly accept the title of Scrooge, and let me tell you why. If you've ever read the book or seen one of the movies, you know Scrooge was all about money and all about himself. When approached to contribute to the poor children so they could have food on Christmas, his response was, "Are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons?" He simply didn't care. Then over Christmas Eve, he was visited by three ghosts, Christmas's past, present, and future. By far, the most feared was Christmas Future, as the ghost showed him the tombstone of Ebenezer Scrooge while he was being buried, with nothing but hate surrounding his body by the gravediggers doing their work. It was by this insight into his future that the selfish, curmudgeon Ebenezer changed. When he awoke in the morning, he was a different man. He joyfully had the prize turkey purchased and delivered to the Cratchit household. He even went to visit and learned of Tiny Tim's health problems. The story ends with the words that, from that day forward, Ebenezer kept Christmas in his heart every day of the year. The man Ebenezer became after the night of the three ghosts is the man I would like to be. I have been far too outspoken on subjects which, when viewed in the overall scheme of life, are meaningless. It didn't take visits from three ghosts to teach me that lesson. Just spending time with one old-time racer with deep connections to the sport. I am thankful for that friendship and for all his willingness to overlook the brashness of a Scrooge before the ghost encounters in our friendship. Call me Scrooge. I love it. For what Scrooge was is certainly comparable to what I was, but now hopefully I can become the Scrooge after the ghost. What an honor I perceive that to be. In ending, remember this if nothing helps. Some of the finest words ever written were spoken by angels to shepherds in the field. Quoting now, "Be not afraid, for behold, I bring you glad tidings of great joy. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord." While I am not the Reverend Brother to whom Jeff referred last week, I am a man on a mission now to be kinder and more caring and to spread the word of love for all. What I have learned in the past 2 months, especially about the homeless around my neighborhood, makes me want to make a difference. When my Christmas future comes and I am no longer here, all I really need people to remember is that I cared. Merry Christmas, everyone, and God bless us, everyone. Thanks for that line, Charles. Means a lot to me being able to say that with sincerity. Back to you, Jeff. Thank you. David, I'm sure we'll have that up on the homepage.
Very nicely done. Very nicely done.
You know, the Grinch is the same story as the Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The Grinch's heart grew three sizes that day.
It's the exact same story.
Yeah, it is.
Cody, what'd you bring, buddy?
Well, I didn't even realize that, Bobby. The Grinch was
thinking about it.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking about that. Kind of caught me off guard.
You know, it's the same story. And isn't it funny how Scrooge and Grinch have become terms? You know, have become words that mean, you know, a miser.
Yep.
You know, whatever, but they're both become names in their own right, or term, you know, adjectives, or nouns, actually. Don't be a Scrooge.
Or a Grinch.
Yeah, or a Grinch. The Grinch even has, and both of them have negative connotations
when you
say them.
Yes, yeah, you're referring to somebody in a negative way if you refer to them as Scrooge or Grinch.
Unless it's Tim.
Who is both?
No, because think about the end of both of those stories. At the end of the Grinch is, his heart grew three sizes that day.
Yeah.
Yeah, never mind. from very small to small.
And that's right. You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
Yep.
Yep. One of the best characters in the Grinch was Max the dog.
Well, I want to know how all of our listeners are doing with the new webpage and the new format. Comments? How much feedback have you gotten, Jeff, from our listeners?
Not really a lot. Just people trying to find their way around. You know, some people have complimented it, and some people have said, "I like, you know, how come you don't have any pages that look like the old site?" Because it's not the old site. Is the answer to that? It's a brand new site. But basically, what we did was we preserved the separation of the photo galleries for stock car and drag racing, and we have a means so that when you upload, you can decide which gallery you put it in. We preserve the groups split between stock car and drag racing. Everything else is combined, you know. So,
well, it must be fairly easy to get to. A friend of mine texted me a while ago, and I mentioned that I was on the air, and she wanted to know if what the website was, and I gave it to her. And a very short time later, came back and said, "I'm on. I'm listening." So
there you are.
That's cool.
And you got fans.
Who fans?
She, by the way, is our resident embroidery specialist who did our hats and shirts and stuff.
Goat Rodeo. Cool. Those nice hats.
Yep. All right, so Cody. Shout out to Miss Jane.
Hi, Miss Jane. Take it away, Cody.
All right. So last week was the anniversary of Lloyd C's birthday. He would have been 96, I believe. So I just kind of want to talk about Lloyd C for just a second.
There you go.
And what cool. What he could have been, you know. What he only raced for 3 years, from November 11th, 1938, was the first race he ever ran. First stock car race in the state of Georgia, which he won at Lakewood. And then he got killed on September 2nd of 41. So just, you know, not even 3 full years. But what could have been, you know, everybody, well, of course, there's not really too many people that was around back then that are still with us today. But, you know, when you look back on the old interviews, Bill France was a big proponent that Lloyd C was the best race car driver that Bill France ever saw. And if you ever read Driving with the Devil, you know, there's quotes in there from lawmen that chased him, that saying they, you know, he could do stuff with a car that nobody else could even think about trying to do. So, sorry about my voice. I'm still getting over this cold. But, you know, Lloyd C. was just an amazing driver, and I think we all wish we could have saw him drive at least one time, but he was just had a laid-back demeanor about him. He was just a great driver on the road and on the track. And even though he is considered a champion, a two-time national champion, but you know, back in the day without a formal point system, they you know, you might have one race just to decide the whole championship, kind of like we do now. But it was just informal back then. But he still is considered a two-time national stock car champion. So I just kind of wanted to bring up that for just a second, that we just recently would have celebrated a birthday of his on the 14th. I'm looking at my calendar. So just, it's interesting to think of what could have been.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, Cody, what Lloyd C. was doing with cars was not because the car had any trick modifications or whatever. It was all him. Because none of them had no trick mess. As you know, suspensions and all that, they were all
right.
Pretty much stock. He was just a wheel man. Bill France, I think the quote was, "He was the best one I ever saw, and I saw all of them."
That's a pretty good compliment. I don't care who the giver is. That's a pretty good compliment.
Well, you know, when Earnhardt first came into Winston Cup in the late 70s, early 80s, and he won his first championship, they evidently asked Bill France, said, "What do you think of Dale Earnhardt as a stock car driver?" And he said, "He's the best stock car driver that I've seen come along since Lloyd C. Or maybe even the best since Lloyd C. But we've got a picture in the museum. It's a mural on the wall where they blew up the picture. It's a picture everybody knows of him on two wheels, Lloyd C. going through the North Turn at Daytona. And this picture is blown up on the wall to where it's, you know, it's probably 8 feet tall. So we can see a lot more detail. And I never noticed it till, you know, when you look at this small picture and then you look at the real thing, or the larger version of it. When he's up on two wheels, he's got his arm propped out the window. So he's driving it one-handed.
On two wheels.
I think in that same race, Cody, he flipped one time, landed on the top. The fans, the spectators come out there and help them turn it back over, and he still finished fourth. I think that was all in the same race.
It could have been. And, you know, there was just, I think my favorite story is the one that he wasn't racing, but he was going through Dawsonville, didn't have a load of moonshine on him, but there's an officer that pulled him over, and you know, he said, "You were speeding, fine." I think it was like $10 or something like that. So he handed him $2 $5 bills. The fine was $10, but he went ahead and gave him two $10 bills. And he said, the fine's only $10. He said, well, I know, but I'll be coming back a lot faster later. I don't have time to stop. So, he painted pants on his next fine.
He was related to Roy Hall.
Yep.
And Raymond Parks.
Yep, that was the first super team. The Lloyd C. Roy Hall. Yep.
And I tell you, I'm really looking forward to Raymond's induction to the NASCAR Hall of Fame next month. I'm just so thrilled, so ecstatic for that, and mostly because I hate to be negative, but I just really didn't think he would ever get in
because
as many people know about him. And so I'm gonna be there for the induction. I'm just so excited for that because it's way past due, and you know Raymond done so much for.
I think if we all had a central cause at Racers Reunion, it was to get Raymond Parks in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely,
There
was certainly no more deserving person than him. When you think of the contributions to NASCAR, how could you not? Of course, now you have to be a student of history to even know about him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So he was already gone way before I was even old enough to know anything. That doesn't diminish my admiration for him. And they make this argument now, well, we got to have heroes that people know about. That's not necessarily true.
Get your history books out of
the Hall of Fame's job to let people know about him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know Babe Ruth. A lot of people did, but that doesn't lessen his status.
What'd he drive?
As a hero. So that is another weird argument, you know, for inducting all these contemporary drivers, not taking anything away from them. But Mr. Raymond was on at least on the same level as all of them and possibly more, and was so deserving to just continually keep skipping over him was just such a travesty. So good that he made it through. We won one battle, kind of, didn't we?
Yeah, and it's probably in no small part to not us, but people like us, people that have done the research and are race fans enough to have done the research and realize what a contribution some of our racing forefathers have made.
Well, none of us obviously knew Lloyd C. That doesn't diminish our
admiration.
Right. Well, the fact that Bill France compared Earnhardt with Lloyd C. makes a big statement. And of course, I suppose we've all heard the statement about Earnhardt was someone made, and I don't know who made it, but that he could see air. Mm-hmm. That was in the beginning stages of the aero age of NASCAR, yep. And Earnhardt understood the aero. Possibilities in racing for his time better than anybody and made very, very good use of it.
Yep, so could Junior Johnson in a 59 Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Who invented drafting.
Yeah. But yeah, and the wings on it made it fly. I understand. I don't know because I've never seen one, but maybe some of you guys remember. The 59 and the 60 had those horrible wings on them on the back.
Oh, yeah.
I have heard that NASCAR allowed them to box those in so that the back of the car didn't pick up.
Well, that old 59 that he won, she looked pretty stock. It was actually a post car. It wasn't even a hard top. Yeah. But he learned he could get in behind somebody. He was like 20 miles an hour slower than the Pontiacs.
Yeah.
But he could draft along with
him. He learned that drafting.
Now, just a quick question. Is there an advantage to running a post car and a hardtop car?
No. The advantage is the design of the roof.
The roof won't fall in on you.
Whether no, that's called roll bar. But the
slope of the back glass.
The slope of the back glass, i.e. the 59, 60, 61 Chevrolet as opposed to the 62 and 3 that had the look of a convertible. And the almost vertical back glass,
no difference in a 55 Chevrolet back glass.
Yeah.
Where they had
the
55 had the same back glass in it.
Yeah. All right, it's that time, people.
Already?
It's that time. Thanks to everybody for putting this thing together. Love it. Thanks to you people to come out and listen to us. We love you too, as always. And especially now, I want to say a very special thanks to the men and women that serve in the military.
We going to be back next week?
Yeah. If y'all want to. It's Tuesday, right?
Okay.
Right. I might not be.
All right. Well, it's up to you.
I might not be.
Okay. Well, then I guess we're not then. All right. We won't be here next week.
We won't be here next week, folks.
All right.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll see y'all. Love you. Mean it. Good night.
Good night.